Welcome to the Grin Gets Real podcast, a show for marketers by marketers to talk shop and share insights on the ever-changing landscape of the digital world. My name is Katya, and I am your host on this exciting journey as we talk to our experts who join us. Now, in every episode, we aim to help marketers maximize their potential by getting real with industry experts across multiple industries and disciplines. From influencer marketing to e-commerce strategy, we talk through it all and leave you with actionable tips to help you in your day-to-day marketing. Now, Johanna Voss is a talent manager trusted by social media influencers who want clarity on how to build their brands, grow their business, earn their worth, and plan strategically for their future. On behalf of her clients, she's closed over $3 million of brand deals, partnerships, and speaking engagements. Her clients have partnered with brands such as Kroger, Walmart, AARP, Little Northern Bakehouse, H&R Block, and Aldi. Negotiation is something she thoroughly enjoys, be it for her clients, friends, or even with strangers. Entering her 12th year of working for herself, she understands all about the necessary pivots entrepreneurs take along their journey. So put your AirPods in, turn up that volume, and get ready for my guest today, Johanna Voss. Well, welcome, Johanna, to the Grin Gets Real podcast. I am so excited to be talking to you about just kind of diversity and influencer marketing and what that play looks like.
Hi, Katya. Thanks for having me. I feel the same amount of enthusiasm and excitement to be here.
I was going to jump in and tell you that you feel joy in talking to me, but that's overextending myself. I'd love it if you could get started and share a little bit about yourself and what your role is in the influencer marketing space.
Yes. So I live in Denver. I'm Pisces in Denver. I like long walks in the mountains.
Perfect.
I do love long walks in the ocean, but there's not much of that out here. I am a talent manager for influencers. So my role in the whole theme of influencer marketing, working with brands and companies, is I pop in representing the influencer whenever a brand or an agency works out to partner with them. And I come in pretty much from that very first moment of connection to get all the details on the project. So, you know, what is it? You know, what are the deliverables you want? YouTube, blog, something on social, something different, something on TV. What's the timing? When do you need this? What's the budget? What are the expectations? What's the exclusivity? So I ask 100,000 questions and then get all that information and then continue being a part of it all the way through the negotiation of the actual money part, all the way to getting the agreement signed. Once that happens, then I'm out of it. I still stay involved to manage the project. So just connecting with my talent to be like, okay, what are your due dates? When are you going to turn in content? So that I can manage the expectations of the brand and agency. Or conversely, if they're like, hey, we need it by this day, I'm like, okay, client person, like you need to get the content in by, you know, in 2 weeks turnaround or whatever. So once it goes off to the client for creation, I'm pretty much out of it. Once they're done and it comes back to go to the brand for approval, then I pop back in and keep the train moving.
Going and all of that good stuff. What's your relationship then with the brand that reaches out to you? Because I know that there's a lot of talent who hires talent managers to help with all of those things that you're talking about. But I know that also the power of influencer marketing and creators is that authentic connection with the brand. And a lot of that is established like with the relationship. Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering, like, adding a talent manager, is the influencer still holding a bit of that relationship with the brand? Do you hold most of that relationship? Like, what does that dynamic look like?
So the reality is I hold most of it just by nature of being the point of communication, but I'm also very much the messenger. So if like, it's never my opinion on what I think should happen or what I think the content should look like. Or if they ask me like, well, what do you think your client would love to do? Like if we, you know, can outline the project goals, like what do you think is the best thing for your client? I may be like, I really think they should be on video because like this would be so awesome in video, but let me ask them, I'm going to bring this to them and I'll get back to you. So very much just a conduit for information. So I feel like the brands, the feedback that we've always gotten is that the brands do appreciate having a responsive talent manager just because we like will respond way quicker than the talent ever will.
Yeah.
And most everyone is like, yeah, we really felt like we were able to have Lorraine's voice or Yvette's voice throughout the partnership and project. Sometimes brands will be like, hey, we'd love to hop on a, you know, a briefing call. I'm like, great. And then everyone's on it. And it's usually more, I'm more just listening and like making sure that everything is like what we agreed to, or answering questions or stuff. So there's always opportunities to connect with the talent. And I never, I'm like, no, you can't talk to the person.
It's only me.
Yeah. Part of it is more like, you can email them, but I can get an answer quicker. So like, I can make your life a lot easier for like keeping this project going.
Now, at what point does someone need a talent manager? And maybe it's not need, but like, what's that pain point that a creator typically reaches in your experience where they're like, okay, I can't handle this all on my own? Is it when it stops becoming a side hustle and it is like their consistent source of income? Is it a little time before that? Or maybe it's all over the board. I'm not sure. Like, at what point do you find that creators reach out to talent managers?
So creators reach out to talent managers at all levels.
Awesome.
Starting when they have 150 followers all the way up to like a million. We work off commission. We earn 20% of, well, anywhere from 10 to 20%, depending on what
the deal
is. Yeah. No, no, not the deal, but like my business is structured that I earn 20% off of any partnership that comes in.
Okay.
I always use Kris Jenner as an example because she does 10%, but obviously she's making like way more money. So I tell my clients, I'm like, I'm happy to go to 10% when you're making like boku millions of dollars.
Yeah, then we can evaluate the percentage.
Totally. Yeah, I'm like, I'm happy to reconsider it, but like, let's keep to like Kardashian Jenner levels. But my business model is 20%. There are some that do 10 to 20. I would say like 15 to 20 is 100% industry standard. I've never seen anything really over 20%, me personally. So talent who wants a manager needs to keep that in mind, that we work off commission. So if you are only earning $6,000 a year or $2,000 a month, or you're, you know, $50,000 a year, all that is fantastic. But I would say you're not quite ready for a manager because it's like, you know, 20% of 20,000 is $4,000. You take out taxes, you take out overhead. Like, I need to have a lot of clients that are earning 20,000 or more to make it worthwhile.
Yeah.
You just kind of like run the numbers and do the math. So for me, my threshold at a minimum is like 150, 100,000, looking, you know, 200,000, quarter million, about where someone already is just for brand partnerships. Because I don't touch ebooks, affiliate, you launch a course, you sell a product, you have a coaching business. Like, I don't touch any of that. It just has to be those numbers only on brand partnerships. But influencers reach out. I mean, I did 4 prospect calls this week of people who had a range of numbers, some around what I have, and then some that's like almost at 100,000, but it didn't have the level of brand partnerships quite yet to make it worthwhile to have a manager.
Well, I'd love to double click on the type of brand partnerships that kind of make up very successful creator. So when you just mentioned they don't have like kind of those right partnerships, what is the right partnership? Is it more of this long-term? Is it more of like frequency? Is it frequency or range?
Yeah. So that's a really good question. So I guess when I say right partnerships, I mean just like they've had enough partnerships to equal a financial amount.
Yeah.
So 2 different scenarios. You've got one person, let's say, who makes 100,000 with 4 partnerships that are 25,000 each. That sounds amazing. Good for them. Like, that sounds really badass, right? And super cool. And then you have another creator who, let's say, makes 100,000, but they've done 20 partnerships.
Yeah.
So they do 2 to 3 a month. Their partnership amount per partnership is obviously like 5,000 or less, right? On average.
Yeah.
I would much rather work with the creator who has 20 partnerships at a less amount than the one who has 4 at 25,000. And here's why. Because the person who has more frequency of partnerships, to me, it means you're on more of the brand's radar And that there's more to leverage and build upon and more opportunity for relationship building and continuing to work with an agency or brand. Like if you, and it's hard to say, because someone who did maybe the four, maybe they had 250, you know, inbound requests, but these were the only four they said yes to. But it's like work begets work. And if you do a big partnership and then you're quiet for a bunch of months, like it's almost hard to rebuild that momentum and get in the flow. Whereas like, if you're doing it and you're consistent with it, I really feel like that momentum gives you opportunity to leverage and build and show that you are staying active. Because if you do one and then you don't do one for a few months in influencer space is like years, right? You're just like 3 months ago, social media.
Exactly. You may as well have been obsolete. You may as well call yourself MySpace.
Totally. Okay, yeah.
Maybe that's too dramatic.
But exactly. So for me, it's like, not only is it the amount that you're earning, but like, are you even on their radar? Are you on the brands and agencies' radar? Because I can't do that. Like I have a lot of people reach out to me who are like, oh, you know, I want your help in like pitching and this and that. And I'm like, well, what I'm pitching, the products I'm pitching is your content, which is like your website, your writing, your photography. It's like, I'm not doing that for you.
Yeah.
And I know people are not asking me to do that, although sometimes I think they are, but it's like, you have to have a good product to, for me to then pitch. Like it's super easy with all my clients to pitch and give examples and showcase stuff and like have a sense of who they are.
Yeah.
But if you don't have that going, because that's what they look for and search for, they don't search for talent managers. I'm like, you got to do that on your own and kind of like get that train moving. And the honest reality is that nobody wants to hear, as I truly believe, like each content creator and talent has to do that themselves.
Yeah.
Like no one else can build or carry that. I was like, that's your baby. Yeah. You can outsource photography.
Yeah, it's your portfolio. It's your portfolio. This is the level of work that we do. And I think that I've seen a lot of really great examples of like portfolios that not only include the work, but include the metrics behind it as well too. Mm-hmm. And the case studies of like, hey, I did this partnership and this is what it garnered. Like, do you, I would imagine that that's got to be really helpful from a talent manager perspective to be like, hey, this is the portfolio. This is where they've seen successes. And yes, I think that this person could be very successful for your particular brand.
Absolutely. Here's some feedback we've had of like past partnerships. Yeah, exactly. Here's what's worked. You know, here's some things that went really well. Here's why we think they went really well. Yeah. Showing case studies and metrics are great. I will say the thing about metrics that's like kind of annoying, right? Is that Instagram has its own, does whatever the heck it wants with the algorithm, and you'll have tens of thousands of views on something. And then you post, you know, sponsored content. Instagram is like, no, we don't want anyone, you know, they'll hide it. So it is frustrating. Sometimes like metrics don't always show the true breadth and depth and influencers' abilities. But I think most of the time, like everyone knows that and it's kind of taken into consideration.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it also puts more of an emphasis of having a very broad, for lack of a better word, a broad portfolio, right? Of like, hey, this is who I've worked with. These are some examples of it. This is what I can do. You know, I'm on these networks as well too. I love what you said about like, hey, you know, you're give me something to be able to sell in order to be able to book those things, which leads me into the next question. And I promise I am getting to the diversity part. I just have all of these foundation questions for you is I'd love to know, and maybe there is no number for this, but inbound versus outbound, right? Are you spending a majority of your time as a talent manager finding brand deals, or are you spending a majority of it just trying to figure out which ones that are coming in are the right deals?
Yes. Each of my clients receive hundreds of inbound requests a year.
Yeah.
And that's everything from like, hey, will you promote our candle for free? Up to real legit opportunities. We say no to about 70 to 80% of them. I don't pitch consistently. I do, and I hate the word pitching because I feel like when you talk about it in this space, what I have experienced is like a lot of influencers, when they reach out for talent management, they're like, oh, and I want you to pitch me. And there's just like this attachment to, again, what we were kind of just talking about. It's like, I want you to then grow my business and find me partnerships. That's fantastic. There are managers that do that. Yeah. I am not one of those people. It's a long sales cycle.
Yeah.
I, as a person, have to have those relationships with the, you know, and know who the person is. So it's like, let's say they want some brand that I don't know who the agency is, or I don't have a contact. Yeah. You know, I got to track them down, find it, connect with them. maybe get an email back. It's a long time spent before you see a return, especially when agencies are planning 4, 5, 6 months out for their content. I could reach out to someone and then I may hear 7 months from now and they may respond to that exact email as if I just emailed them yesterday, which happens. And it always boggles my mind. It's like, I know people are saving them, you know, when I send updated rosters or like new client media kits.
Yeah.
But it's just, it takes forever. And it's like, I don't have the patience or desire to have that slow of a burn on building my business. And honestly, my clients are all busy with inbound stuff that they're not, hey, Joanna, do I have clients that want more work? Sure. Are some clients having slower seasons than others? Absolutely. That's the nature of the beast. So it's like, okay, what can we do? Like, you keep creating good content. I'll do another round of just like outreach just to say hi, check in. Like, that always drums up work. But a lot of times when I have prospects reach out to me and they ask about, you know, oh, do you pitch? There's just this like frenzied sort of expectation that I'm going to bring them a ton of business. And it's like, that's not how it works.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't pitch. Again, there are people that do and they have much greater success at it. I also think some industries are easier and better to pitch at, which is some of the feedback I've gotten from talking to other people. And I'm not in those industries. I just do more like planting seeds, like, hey, so-and-so person, you know, my client has been using your product for the past 6 months. Yeah. You know, you've been doing some partnerships, like here's her media kit. Here's a couple ideas she had that are super creative. If you could just keep her in mind or like, let me know about anything upcoming, like really appreciate it. And then I'll just follow up. But there's no like, hire my client right now. Like, that's just
as fun as that sounds.
No, I know. I wish it was that easy.
Well, I think that also creator management is definitely something from the outside seems like, oh, it's got to be so easy. Just do this. Just reach out. Mm-hmm. It's the word just being used as well, too. And it's interesting that you bring up like the word pitch and how you don't like it. And I could see why it's not an attractive word, because to me, it seems a little bit like dehumanizing, and not to be overly dramatic about it. But like what you're talking about, that planting the seed, to me sounds like I'm establishing a relationship, right? Totally. Because it's easier to have a conversation with a friend or an acquaintance that you have versus someone who's just pitching you, quote unquote, air quotes, pitching you when they need something, right? Or when they're on the hunt, I guess, for lack of a better word.
Yeah, it just feels so like gripping in me, like not necessarily desperate, but just like putting it all on you, Joanna, like pitch me and like go find me work.
And it's gotta be tough.
Yeah. And I'm also just like, well, if that's what you think and how this happens, you don't understand that when we're recording this podcast, it's December 2021. Brands are sourcing talent and creating campaigns for Mother's Day.
Yeah.
Like, right now. So for me to pitch you for something that you think is amazing for like your new, I don't know, fitness thing in January, or there's a new recipe because you want to do this partnership with this food for like this new smoothie thing. They're like past that.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's like you have to understand, and most people don't know how long it takes to build out a campaign.
Yeah.
Something I've just learned kind of as we go along, but it takes a long time. And it's like, you can't just pitch and then be like, oh, I was waiting for you to send me this amazing proposal of how to spend $15,000. Like, I had this money and I didn't know what to do. You know, thank God you emailed me. It's like, that's not how it happens.
If it were that easy, I think everybody would do it.
Totally. Yeah, it's like, well, I was just gonna say, that's a really good point. When people who hate it want me to do it, I'm like, yeah, because you know how damn hard it is.
It is hard. Yeah. It is so hard. The talent that you represent is so interesting to me because, of course, this podcast is on like the diversity element. So, all of your talent are women and a majority of them are Latinas. So I'm really interested in learning just kind of some of the challenges, especially in this evolution of like the creator economy. But what are some of the challenges that you are facing as a talent manager, or some that you're seeing your talent facing right now as creators in the space?
Two things that come up. So I have 8 clients that I represent right now. 7 of them are women of color. As you said, majority Latinas and 1 African-American woman. I mean, there's always the token non-white person for sure. That happens year round. There's also when brands come a knock in for like, oh, it's African-American month in February, or it's Hispanic Heritage Month, you know, half of September and half of October. We'd love to celebrate your voice and your heritage and this, that, and the other. but just for these 4 months. And then we're going to like go back to not celebrating Latinos and pretend like they're not part of our customer base, which is so weird to me. So that's what we run into, is just feeling like, oh, you're just doing this to check a box.
Yeah.
We never know. But there's definitely partnerships where it's like, oh, you actually do care and you're committed and my client isn't the only Latina or Black person on a campaign. And there's just some more like, it's a year-round thing. Like, you know, you don't see them as just, oh, I need a Latina creator for my campaign, so I'm just going to grab them and put them in and like, woo, my boss will be happy. They actually are an integral part of the whole longer campaign.
Yeah.
The other thing is general market versus Hispanic market. And it comes down to budget for partnerships. When I'll, you know, brand will reach out, they want to hire one of my clients. Like, great, what's your budget? Or, you know, what's the rate for this? I'll give my clients rate. They're like, oh yeah, we don't have that much money. That's general market. Like, general market has more. We're working with the Hispanic market budget. And by nature, it's usually, I don't actually know, I've never seen numbers, but a quarter, a third, a half of what general market is. Yeah, which blows my mind, because I'm like, businesses obviously care about the bottom line. Like, that's their number one thing that they care about. And I'm like, you're talking about someone who's part of your consumer base.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. Like, when you're talking about the general versus Latino market, right? Are we talking about from the creator side or who they're marketing to? Like saying, oh, the creator's audience is the Latino audience, so that's what we charge for this, versus like general, like everybody under the umbrella audience when you talk about that.
I don't know. That's a good question. They being the brand, you know, they've divided up their audience by race. And you have general market. And sure, we want to target Latinos for this, so we're going to hire a Latina creator because their audience, we're going to do the content in Spanish. It's like, okay. But then when you step back, you're like, so then by default, what's general market? Well, general market's white people who are English speakers as their first and maybe only language, versus someone who's bilingual. Maybe they are born here and speaks both languages or multi languages. Somehow they're like in this other bucket of money or target. Does that make sense? It's like,
I mean, like what I'm hearing you say is that one of the challenges that you've seen is that there is this almost segmented out, like what the different rates are for the audience that they're trying to reach. When in reality, I mean, an audience is an audience regardless of it. You as a brand should know who your like essentially buyer persona is. And it's saying like, hey, I'm valuing this buyer persona by race versus I am valuing this buyer persona because they will get the most value from what it is that I'm selling.
And the person in charge of it's always Hispanic, Latina. And yeah, they'll just like tell me like, we have Hispanic market money that we're working with. And I'm like, what?
What does that even mean?
So is your person in Miami who's whoever's following like the Latino that you're hiring for this campaign, like the person that you think is going to get the information through them by this partnership, are they not hearing, they're not seeing it on social from another influencer? Or are they not seeing it on like the advertising on the Today Show? They're only getting their news from like Telemundo or Univision or something. It's like just so blinders on. I'm like, everyone's your market. Like, I just don't care.
Exactly. Well, that's why I'm saying that as a brand, it's easier to identify like your buyer persona based on like what their pain points are. What does your brand product or service solve for someone, and like reverse engineer that back to, you know, the creators that you're looking to represent. And in my opinion, the creators should be diverse regardless, right? When you are engaging with relationships with brands, what does diversity look like to you? Do you go down the rabbit hole to make sure that your talent isn't like a token talent? Or is it, I mean, do you go that deep when you are looking for the right relationships, or you're figuring out, is this the right brand partnership for our talent?
We will happily be the token person. We will happily take the brand's money. That is not a problem, because they're not going to say no. And then be like, okay, fine. Just let me go to the next Latina on the list. My client will happily partner. And, you know, I will suggest other names. I mean, that's when everything in 2020 unfolded with George Floyd's murder, and there was conversations, you know, the Black Square and social media and like Blackout Tuesday and everything. And there were conversations that were louder because they have been happening, but companies had to reckon with looking a little inward about their, you know, board of directors and, you know, how much do they actually integrate with diversity of choosing talent and paying across the board. And I was thinking like, okay, well, what's something like, what's my role? How can I help? How can I do something better? And I was like, oh, well, like I only recommend influencers of color, full stop. That is it. And so whenever brands reaching out and sourcing names for me, I only send influencers of color. And I'm like, and I'm happy to make a recommendation. I'm happy to do an email intro. And sometimes I will just to make the connection. So then the person beyond someone that I represent has an introduction and like has a name.
Yeah.
But to your question, no, we'll happily be, I mean, I say happily be the token, like we'll bitch about it and like make fun of the company for sure behind their back. But it's a great opportunity and it builds my client's portfolio. And especially if it's a big agency, then they get in their database and we build those relationships and it's something to be leveraged for down the road and in the future. I think what also happened that was beneficial, at least in this space out of last year, is if a company, for example, pre-2020 reached out and said, oh, Joanna, we'd love to hire, you know, one of your clients, blah, 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 with this great campaign. It's Hispanic Heritage Month. We're going to celebrate, you know, Latina voices. Here's what we want from them, X, Y, and Z. And the pay was dismal or like insulting or painful. Or simultaneously, you're talking to me about valuing the voice, but like you're offering $400? Like what?
Yeah.
For some crazy scope of work and like a quick turnaround or something like that. Before I would just be like, I would just say no. And now with the blessing of my clients and actually like totally their support is like, I will now say, this is insulting. And you are asking for X, the irony of you're asking for it, but at the same time, your actions are not living up to what you want. You are taking advantage of my client. You know, I will now write a nice short professional email pushing back and mentioning why my client's saying no and why they need to reconsider and like put better budget behind it. Hasn't always worked. Makes us feel better. I feel better, at least that we're like sticking up and using a voice and pushing back and pointing out when a brand is being ridiculous. And I have one client where we've actually gone a little bit deeper to what you were saying about going down the rabbit hole of like seeing how much diversity. It was this hotel that had reached out to work with her and they were like, oh, you know, look at us. We're in like Deep Ellum in like this African-American neighborhood and we're so excited to support our community and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And there was an architect who built the hotel who was a first Black architect in the state or something. And so my client was like, okay, but their whole board of directors, it's owned by this global hotel corporation. It's all white. The chefs are white. The managing director's white. Like, this is just PR word soup of, you know, making themselves feel like, look at us supporting the community. And so I was asking really tough questions to the PR person, like, how are you supporting the community? You know, look at the contradiction between you're saying this, but then this is actually the reality of what's happening in real time. And I got a lot of PR word soup. I asked some other, you know, questions, thanks to my client who was sort of giving me some more information because it was really important to her. Didn't partner, never got a message back. Didn't surprise me, but we will push back. And again, I don't expect to get a response or I don't expect to change the whole hotel board of directors, but I think just to push back and say why and be like, we as creators and people in this industry are paying attention.
Yeah.
And we're not going to call you out on social media, but like, we're not just going to say, oh no, thanks so much. But like, we're going to pass. It's like, yeah, here's why we're going to pass.
Well, and we're all people. So if you're not treated with respect and dignity, that sticks. And I think that from brand to even creator, I mean, like keeping that in mind as well, too. I cannot imagine that you like, you know, turn to a brand and you're like, F you, but like educating them for the next time, I think is a great path forward because it's these incremental changes that make a difference in the long term versus like what you were saying before. You're like, now what I am doing is I am pushing back. Whereas before I didn't push back, right? It was a kind no, and there was like no education happening. So I think it's those incremental changes that essentially help pave the way. They're not like, I mean, it would be great if there was a switch, but again, it's one of those things, if it were that easy to just all of a sudden everything be more diverse, we would be there already, you know?
Yep. Yeah. That's why, like, when I've submitted other names for talent is kind of aggressive because they don't always ask, but it's like, that's just it. Like, you're not asking. So I'm going to give you some names. Like, you know, the brands agencies are like, oh, it's so hard to find creators, like Black creators that are, you know, in these numbers that have engagement. Well, we don't know where to find them. And I'm like, oh my God. You know, I honestly between like, I'm not going to do your job for you, but I will do the service of giving you 5 to 8, 10 names and a couple pointers and like where to go find more. Cause I know like in your database, you can't search like, I want a Black mom in Dallas who has twins and has gluten free or something. Like, I get you can't search for that.
Yeah.
But you can find people. And there's a whole community of influencers of color that's completely overlooked that has insane engagement, are just so professional and so talented that I'm like, okay, well, at least I can try and like poke the bear a little bit of forwarding some names or making some email intros.
Yeah. I mean, like, that's what's needed. And it's needed kind of just from all sides. What value does having those brand relationships for you play into what it is that you do?
It's everything. I mean, defining the relationship as like something more than just an email, because you can be crappy at relationships and still do this business, especially if you're have talent that's
speaks for itself.
Yeah. I was trying to say like, what's the word, like super wanted, you know, desired talent. So they get a lot of inbound requests and you're literally just like, thank you for writing. What's the timing? Like, what's your, but you know, if you're just writing stuff like that, but relationships are everything in everything, no matter what the industry is. And so to be able to chat offline and, you know, text someone and be like, hey, can we have an offline side conversation about this campaign? Or, you know, someone will send me something like an email, like the official email from the agency and like CC all their team members. And then they'll text me and be like, I just emailed you. Can you call me so I can give you the backstory? And like, it just helps to be able to have those honest conversations, but all based on relationships and being able to connect and just like, honestly, be nice and be responsive. It's fascinating how many people don't turn in content in time, don't follow instructions, ghost brands after saying yes, don't follow edits. It's like the number of people who do those things that then make my clients who do what we would say is the minimum of what you're supposed to, turn the content in time, follow the brief, read the instructions. It makes them look so amazing. And I'm like, well, this is great, but how come other people are being so like incompetent in this world? But that's to their own detriment. But yeah, relationships are absolutely everything. And just being able to meet and connect. And like what you said earlier, we're all humans. We're all trying to do our best and do our job.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, how can influencer marketing better embrace diversity? Do you think it is in those conversations, taking the time to push back and educate in these moments? Or is there, well, there's got to be a ton of things, but I'd love to hear from your talent management perspective, like how can we better embrace diversity within influencer marketing?
There needs to be diverse voices sitting around the table when campaigns are being created, when, you know, briefs are being made, when ideas are happening and are being hatched. And I know that's obviously you can't just like snap your fingers. That's like pipeline conversations and, you know, women don't go past middle management. I mean, all those sort of things, pay equity, like childhood, like down that hole, but that absolutely is a thing.
Yeah.
Like that will take a while, but that is a key part. I mean, the number of briefs we get that are just like massively tone deaf, or when it's like, oh, can you just make your client, like, I obviously can't say look more Mexican, but I'm like, I know that's what you're trying to say, because they'll try and like dance around it. It's insulting. And like, you wouldn't have that if there was other people besides white people sitting at those creative director meetings.
Yeah.
So that's something that I would see very impactful. Ensuring when agencies are sourcing talent, or we want 20 people on this campaign, do you divide it up as, okay, we want X Asian, X Latina, Hispanic, white, African-American, like whatever the case may be. I don't know. I don't see why not.
Yeah.
But looking at actually like, who are the people we're inviting to this campaign versus like, oops, we need a Black person. Like, we should invite a Latino. We should invite, you know, do it from the very beginning. Like, look at your databases and keep personal lists, like whatever you need to do. Because again, I know in databases, you can't source by race or ethnicity, but we're all on social. And so many times people will say, oh, I follow your client, so I'm so excited to hire them for this campaign. It's like,
yeah,
as a person like on social, not even in your job, but just look at the people you're following. Follow more influencers of color.
Yeah.
You follow all women, go find guys.
Yeah.
Find Asian, you know, African-American, Pacific Islanders. Like, literally look at your following so that your feed isn't just a bunch of white, mostly women.
Yeah. No, I hear you. I can definitely appreciate that sentiment of like what we can do incrementally to make these mm-hmm. changes. Okay. So we're now down to prediction time. What do you see? I know, right? What do you see changing?
I don't know. I already don't know.
I have no idea where it's going to go. What do you see changing in influencer marketing in the next 1 to 2 years?
I see all these predictions come out about like influencer spending will reach 2 billion in 2022. And I'm like, or people talk about like the trends of like what's going to be popular on TikTok and stuff. I have no idea. I am like, so in the present, I do not clue into that at all. I mean, there's things that like I wish and hope and want, but actually will happen. I think what's coming up is like the rise, the slow, teeny tiny rise that's building towards something bigger of influencers using their voice, of profiles being created to be more transparent about specific brands. So you can go look. Oh, this brand offered me X amount. What are they paying other people? And people are like, well, I did this statement of work. These are my followers. And like, this is how much I got paid.
Yeah.
There's definitely a lot more of that voice from the influencer side.
Yeah.
I think it's a whisper right now. It will continue to grow to be louder where brands will be forced to change and have a bit of a reckoning. But I think that's what we'll see more of is perhaps some more transparency around just brands that suck. Like, we'll be able to, someone will just maybe talk about it. So people can be like, ooh, don't partner with that brand. And it's hard, you know, there's like however many 20,000 new creators a day on Instagram,
yeah,
you know, profiles. I have no idea. I'm making that number up, but it's just like, that is, it's so loud. Like, the noise is so loud. And if you pass on something because they want you to create a YouTube video for your platform and you have 3 million followers and they want to give you $500, there'll be someone who will do it for $500. So like,
yeah,
it's hard because they're like, okay, well, we'll just go find the person who does it. Get what you pay for. But I think the more that creators are also able to talk amongst themselves around,
yes,
being confident to say, well, these are my rates. This is what I charge. You know, it's in my best interest that you don't charge less, because then I can't, it's harder for me to ask for more. So I think just more conversations, people feeling more confident about chatting with their peers and connecting with their peers,
yeah,
rather than just being in like their singular influencer silo. And I think all those different conversations and things unfolding continues to move the needle in a way where brands will be more accountable, will just be better,
yeah,
not insulting with their offers. And it's like, okay, you want something, you want a content creator because they're so professional and you love their brand and their vibe and, you know, their content and their look. And it's like, well, they've either spent 10 years in the industry becoming an expert.
Yeah.
They hire a team. They have a stylist. They have a food stylist, a videographer, photographer. This is their full-time business. And you want to pay them like $500. It's like, they're going to lose money on it. But like, you want that talent. You got to pay for it.
Yeah.
So I think just all those conversations, I don't know if we'll see anything massive or, like I said, tangible, but that's what I would like to see continue to get louder.
Well, it's interesting because you didn't think you had a prediction, but that is a full-on prediction. I think you hit the nail on the head, and I could see that happening in the next 1 to 2 years, is having those conversations and spreading the education and like truly brands understanding that a creator is a little studio, is really what they are. Mm-hmm. Like, they're your design team, they're your creative team, and they are sharing your brand story. So treating it like it's a business is part of that too, but you need to start having those conversations, and creators need to start having them amongst themselves as well too. All cards on the table, guys. We're here in this together.
Mm-hmm. I've said this, I'll use this opportunity for anyone who's listening and that's a creator. I am happy to If anyone like isn't sure about how much to charge for something, slide into my Instagram DMs. I will happily and honestly like love being able to say, no, you need to charge more because it helps our whole industry.
Yeah.
And people just have no idea. You know, no one wants to talk about numbers. Like everyone's gets so, it's so personal. And I'm like, it's literally just a number. Like it's a business transaction. I understand why it's so personal, but part of me is like, you're doing yourself in this whole industry a disservice. So anyone who's a creator and listening and ever has a question about like, I don't need to know who it is. You could literally just be like, they want one Instagram post. I want to charge X amount. And I'll be like, let me look at your Instagram. No, you should charge this.
Yeah.
Happy, happy, happy. Cause it helps all of us and just gets people like comfortable talking about their business.
I love it. Well, Joanna, thank you so much. As usual, I knew that we would go over in the time, but it's so easy to talk to you and we could probably talk for, you know, 45 more minutes. So this was fantastic. Thank you again.
I appreciate you having me on. This is any opportunity to talk about this. I think kind of what we were just saying is like, just great to, for people who are maybe just starting their business or maybe not as far along to like know what resources are out there and how to think about this. I feel like we're all trying to half a step, or at least I feel like I'm trying to stay half a step ahead. I often have people like, how are you figuring this all out? And I'm like, on the fly, like literally on the fly.
There's no one place where you can get all of the information. If it was that easy, everyone would be doing it.
That's right.
And on that note, thank you again so much.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, Katya.
Wow, what an episode. Talking about diversity and what Joanna, who is boots on the ground as a talent agent of Latinas and African American creators, on what she is seeing and what her creators are experiencing. She will do a deep dive into the brands that are reaching out to make sure that she has a better understanding of the brand's perspective. That means that she's looking to see if their social feed reflects diversity and that they are representing it in their day-to-day of business. Being a creator is a business of people. And what I appreciate about her candor on what can be and often is a sensitive subject, not really knowing how best to talk about it out loud. I love that she stands firm and executes with kindness. Her approach is one that helps with incremental changes and acts as part of the solution. Because relationships are everything in everything. So really, is there any other way? Want to hear more? Be sure to subscribe to the Grin Gets Real podcast to get the latest episodes. Give us some stars. I wouldn't mind 5 of them. And leave us a review. Connect with me on social. You can find me on LinkedIn. And if you're interested in learning more about Grin, visit our website at grin.co. Until next time, keep grinning.